Welcome, everybody, into the ESPN FC studios for this, the latest edition of the show. Alongside Steve Nichol, I'm Sebastian Salazar. Great to have you along with us. We do have a lot to get to, but let's kick things off at the top of the Premier League, where Manchester City had a chance to momentarily go top of the table. And boy, did they deliver with a 5-1 win at home against Luton Town. Goals from Kovacic, Haaland from the penalty spot, Doku, and Guardiola, as well as a Luton Town own goal just 2 minutes into the match. What does it mean atop the Premier League table? Well, Manchester City now in first place, 2 points ahead of Arsenal and Liverpool, who are both in action on Sunday. For more on this game and the rest of the Premier League, let's welcome into the show Don Hutchison. Was the performance from Manchester City, Don, as impressive as the final score would suggest?
It was, you know, Seb. It was. I thought Kevin De Bruyne was off the charts good in the first half. He could have had 4 assists. He put Haaland through twice. Vardiol missed the header. He put Alvarez through. Nunes he put through as well. So he could easily have had 4 assists. He was that good. Then all of a sudden, they had to go into half-time. There was no panic. They kept the ball. Then it was the Jeremy Doku show. He was unbelievable in the second half. I mean, the goals were going in late because Luton had put so much effort into the game, Seb. They were out on their feet with 15 minutes to go. It was pure tiredness. Then City give them a mauling. And that's done wonders for their goal difference at the same time. Mm.
It took them about an hour, though, Stevie, to really break this thing open, didn't it?
Well, to start putting the ball in the net, and I can't disagree with that. But, you know, sometimes the fixture list can be kind to you because this was a perfect game for City leading into what's going to happen during the midweek, because they were always going to have plenty of the ball, which they do. It was going to be about running the opposition around. You're going to get plenty of chances against Luton Town. They're a completely different side at home and away from home. And so this was the perfect little exercise to play some good football, create some chances, and hopefully score lots of goals. And 5 goals, they'll take that. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Pep had said this week that his team has looked tired. We didn't really see that, did we?
No, we didn't really. But as I said, the opposition helps, you know. Listen, had this been a Manchester derby, we could be talking about a different thing. But the fact is, when you have so much of the ball and you use it the way the City do, the ball's round to go around, as an old coach told me, and they knock it around and it saves the legs. Keep the ball moving, save your legs. That's what they did in this game.
Let's take a look at the odds for the second leg between Real Madrid and Manchester City coming up this week in Manchester. And 3-3 after the first leg, no surprise. Manchester City then at home installed as favorites, according to the odds makers. Don, I know you're not good with numbers, but how much of an edge are you giving City here? Are they big favorites or small favorites?
Well, you like a percentage, so I'll give you a 60-40, I think, in City's favour. Only for the fact that they're 1-37. They don't lose too many games at the Etihad. The bench today, as you mentioned before, Rodri was on the bench, Phil Foden was on the bench, Jack Grealish was on the bench. Kyle Walker should be back. He was on the bench today, so he should be back to try and take care of Vinny Jr. It's going to be a great game because I thought the game in the Bernabeu was an outstanding game. It was the game of the Champions Leagues over the Tuesday, Wednesdays last week because of the standard of football that we witnessed. It was football IQ. It was players playing at the top of their ability. It was fast-flowing football. It was two different styles where City, I thought, were magnificent in possession. But then on the counter, I thought Real Madrid were great. So it'll be exactly the same tactics. So it'll be a great watch. I just think City at home, they'll have the edge. And if they get their finishing boots on, they could put Real Madrid away quite early. But it's going to be a magnificent game to watch.
Kyle Walker obviously didn't play today, but everybody's saying, you know, how important he's going to be to City in the second leg. Why? Why is it such a key that he returns?
Because he can cover the pace of Rodrigo and Vinny that the others can't do. And I said in the highlight, the goal that Barkley scored, one-on-one with Diaz, this is a guy that was Footballer of the Year not that long ago. And defensively now, one-on-one, he looked short. Mm. He never got close to Barkley. And usually when you don't get close, it's because you don't have a first step. That's going to be difficult. If Diaz is playing against Real Madrid, that's going to be tough for City. And I'm with Don. This is 60-40. Mm. I would say it would be a lot more, but for the way that City defend. Listen, if you go to the Bernabeu and score 3 goals and don't win the game,
right,
that tells you where your your big problems are. So this
couldn't you say the same thing about Real Madrid? I mean, they gave up three at home.
Yeah, the problem. Well, the thing is, Real Madrid came into this tie underdogs, both home and away. Mm-hmm. That's just a fact. And so the pressure's on City, and that's why I'm looking at it from a City point of view more than Real Madrid. You know, if Real Madrid go and win this game on Wednesday or Tuesday, whenever it is, then I think it'll be an upset.
Don, you've said City need their finishing boots. We got a good look at Erling Haaland today. How'd you rate his performance, and where do you feel he's at heading into this critical match?
He needed the goal, for sure, Seb. You can see that he's struggling a little bit for confidence. His movement was actually quite good today. What goes unnoticed, I think, when everyone watches Erling Haaland, it's the physical battles. So Rudiger was a great watch, him and Erling Haaland last week. That was a fascinating watch, the pair of them. But sometimes it's the movement off the ball, which creates space for other players. So Alvarez played today. Kevin De Bruyne, as I said before, was magnificent. I'm not sure he'll start. Tricky one, that, for Pep, whether he starts KDB and Phil Foden in the same team. But it goes unnoticed, I think, the work that he does, shifting defenders out of position for midfield runners or wide players to try and expose fullbacks 1v1. He needs goals. Any striker will tell you it's all about the numbers. Sometimes, I think Roberto Firmino at Liverpool was a great example where it didn't worry me that he never scored. It's what he'd done for Mo Salah and what he'd done for Sadio Mane, where Erling Haaland's different. He's built on scoring goals. He's a goal machine. So when he doesn't score, everyone looks at his numbers or looks at him being out of form. But listen, he was out of form about 4 months ago and he scored 5 against Luton. Mm. That's the type of player he is. Well, he got one today, so that'll give him loads of confidence going into the Real Madrid game for sure.
Stevie, you were pretty critical of Rodri asking for a break ahead of this game.
Yep.
for Manchester City. They gave it to him. They got the 5-1 win. Is it now forgotten?
Well, City will have forgotten about it. But if I'm Ancelotti and I'm Real Madrid, I'm thinking, OK, this guy's tired. Mm. He's in it for a reason. Let's get nice and tight. Let's put him under pressure. Because when you're tired and you're put under pressure, you just do everything a little bit slower. Your touch is just off. You think slower. Everything just takes a little knock. So if I'm Real Madrid, I'm absolutely going to be in this guy's face. Mm. No question.
Manchester City, Real Madrid should be an absolute doozy Wednesday, the second leg of the Champions League quarterfinal tie. Spurs began the day in fourth, but they'd finish it in fifth after going away to Newcastle and getting drubbed 4-0. Tottenham gave up 2 goals 2 minutes apart in the first half, one of them to Alexander Isak, who had a couple goals on the day, Anthony Gordon with a goal and an assist, Fabian Schär adding insult to injury with a goal in the 87th minute to make it 4-0. Here's what Spurs manager Ange Postecoglou had to say after the match. It's nowhere near good enough. I was concerned with all of it. There wasn't any part of our game that reached the levels that it needs to for us to be able to play the game on our terms. We allowed them to dictate the way the game was played. A lot of it was self-inflicted by us. We weren't brave on the ball. End quote. Don, what in the world? And I know you love Newcastle, but what in the world happened to Spurs today?
Predictable. It's what they are. I thought Spurs were very, very naive today. They were naive in the Fulham game. If you go all the way back to the Chelsea game where they were down to 9 men, it was ridiculous tactics trying to play a high line on the halfway line, asking defenders to run 50 yards when playing against Chelsea, you'd be better off suited in a low block. And Ange has to remember now that he's not playing in Celtic anymore. He's not playing up in Scotland where you can play the same tactics every week and you've got the best players and you can win. You play the same tactics every single week and the analysis team of the team that you're playing against will find a way of hurting you. And that's what Newcastle done today. Mm. Eddie Howe's analysis team worked on Adoghi being central, Pedro Porro being central. That's their two fullbacks playing inverted. So all the space when Tottenham play a high line was over the top. Mm. So the first 25 minutes of the game, Newcastle sat and they camped in. You can see Adoghi and Porro in their positions, but there were more where Bentancur and Bissouma were, so it doesn't take a genius to work out where the outball was. And that was down the channels, over the top. Every time Bruno Guimaraes got the ball, he flipped it over Van de Ven or Romero. They were banging trouble, and Newcastle could have scored more. So I think Postecoglou needs to sort of take a look at just playing the same tactics every single week. Because as I said before, you know, when you're playing against the best teams in the Premier League, they will find a way. They've got analysis teams left, right and centre, and they will look at Tottenham's weakness. And their weakness, their strength is their weakness when they have an overload of midfield, but their weakness, as you showed today, if you can hit them, well, Harvey Barnes on one side, pace, Anthony Gordon on the other side, pace, and Isak over the top with his finishing, Newcastle could have scored a lot more. And a little mention, Seb, if you were wondering why Newcastle's sort of changed their strip today, it was for the deaf fans were inside the stadium. So they were sporting a brand new strip today with sort of vibrations down the middle for to try and sort of reenact the noise in the stadium.
Oh, very cool.
So that was a great gesture from them, and it worked brilliant. So the cameras kept panning on certain sections of the crowd in St James's Park, and they must have been thrilled trying to get the vibrations, the noise and the atmosphere of the game.
Don Hutchison, entertaining and informative. Obviously, the players today for Spurs weren't any good. But to Don's point, how much of this is on the manager? Because it seemed like Newcastle had things figured out in the first half, and things didn't really change after halftime, if there was a change.
Well, as Don said, they don't change. They play a certain way, and that's it.
Well, but we've credited Ange Postecoglou for the last 4 months for playing that way. Yeah, doesn't he deserve some criticism here? I mean, you've got to have some other club in your bag.
Well, I was just about to, actually.
Sorry.
A chance.
Go on.
We said at the start of the season, the team to go and watch is Tottenham, because there's going to be goals because of the way they play. Now, it's one thing to have your principles, and this is how we're going to play, and we're, you know, Angie's always talking about being brave on the ball. Particularly away from home, you can't always be that open against anybody. And particularly away from home, it's a lot harder to play your football. So you have to be able to adjust your tactics. Nobody's saying that he has to go and stick 10 men behind the ball away from home. But I think he's going to have to realise that if he's going to get anywhere, you can't go away from home and be this open. I mean, Newcastle had a perfect... They sat in the perfect position deep, waiting for the ball to be coughed up, and then put the balls in behind for... Anthony Gordon was like Usain Bolt today. He was just walking past people. And they couldn't deal with Isaac's positioning either. And he's got pace as well. So, yes, Newcastle got this all right, but I would suggest that most teams know exactly what Tottenham are going to try and do. But on days when you're not at your best, you have to have a way of playing that makes up for that, and that you're a lot tighter. And things will be a lot tighter, and the game will be tighter. You can't just always go out and play as if it's the schoolyard. Because if you do that, guess what happens? You go to places like Newcastle, and you get battered.
It was such a bad result, not only the loss, but the four goals conceded. It dropped them out of the top four and into fifth place in the Premier League as we take a look at the odds for who will finish in that last of the top four spots. Will it be Villa? Will it be Spurs? Boy, Don, I mean, after today's performance, I wouldn't put anybody's money on Spurs, would you?
No, because when you see their fixtures, Seb, they have got three really hard fixtures in a row. So Villa have got to go to Arsenal tomorrow. It might change their mindset in terms of trying to get a win. They might see it as a free hit. Unai Emery might think a point there is a fantastic result. It's pretty even. The one thing I would go on the back of the game that we've seen today from a Spurs point of view is I've done a lot of Spurs games this season. And very quickly, I'd done a Luton game about 3 weeks ago. They won 2-1 and they should never have won against Forest last week. So Newcastle copied Forest tactics with Alanga going over the top and Hudson-Odoi. But when they beat, when they won 2-1 against Luton Town, it was really strange because Postecoglou brought Højbjerg on and he brought Bentancur on. And I thought, OK, well, two intelligent players, they'll sit in their positions. They'll make sure they take care of the game. Bentancur was flying forward. Højbjerg, who's a holding midfield player, was flying forward. Odoi was still going forward. Porro was still going forward. It was 5 minutes to go in the game. And I'm sitting there going, you know, I've been a professional footballer for 17 years. We commentate on thousands of games, me and Stevie and Craig and all the guys. And it was alien because instead of just managing a game at 2-1, they were trying to score three and trying to score four. And that's probably why Newcastle looked at it and thought, perfect tactics for us today. Hit them on the break. But the top four race is still on between them and Villa.
If Spurs don't make top four, I'm sure we're going to be looking back at this game, this 4-0 defeat against Newcastle, as one of the main reasons why. Let's take a look at the run-in. And as Don pointed out, Stevie, it's just brutal. Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool, you get a little bit of a break at Burnley, and then you got Man City. So, I mean, you know, I know Chelsea's not what they usually are, but four of those next five against big clubs, that's tough, isn't it, Stevie?
I wouldn't like to be in Tottenham shoes right now.
No,
not at all. I mean, on the face of it, Burnley, Sheffield United should be points in the bag. The others,
All a coin flip, right?
Maybe Chelsea, but you wouldn't back them against the other sides. Because the other sides will score 3, 4 and 5 against you. If you try and go forward the way they do and the way they leave themselves open at the back, listen, even Burnley and Sheffield United could hurt them if they play the way they did at Newcastle.
Spurs, the bad side of the coin today. Newcastle, the good side of the coin. Don, a word quickly on the team you love.
Amazing. That's the Newcastle that we've been watching for the last couple of years. Not so much this season, but got a million injuries. You can see the back line is not their preferred back line. They actually played with three at the back today. So it was Dan Byrne, Cher and Kraft. They had wing backs. Anderson was on one side and Murphy was on the other side. So a change of tactics. Harvey Barnes was a bit deeper. Gordon was deeper. But the front three were outstanding. And a special mention for Bruno Guimarães, who's had or been on 9 yellow cards now for about, I think, 9 or 10 games. So that's now sort of squashed or quashed, and he can relax his play his football again. So he's been hanging on to not getting a suspension. So the perfect day for Newcastle, a brilliant performance.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Manchester United started the day 6th, but they'd finished it 7th in the Premier League after going away to Bournemouth and having to settle for a 2-2 draw. Bournemouth went ahead early, 16 minutes in, through Dominic Solanke before Bruno Fernandes equalized for Manchester United. Then Justin Kluivert scored for Bournemouth. Bruno Fernandes scoring a penalty in the second half to make it 2-2, as Manchester United do get a point on the road. Boy, they were kind of lucky to get the point today, weren't they, Manchester United?
They should have been 4 down at half-time. Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, they should have been 4 down. Solanke and Kluivert scored. Kluivert, well, I guess you've got to say Onana made a fantastic save from Kluivert, but he probably should have scored. Mm-hmm. Kerikez should have scored with a header, hits the crossbar. A couple of other saves that Onana made. I mean, the game could have and should have been done at half-time. Now, the second half was a bore fest from both sides. Bournemouth just couldn't get going again the way they did in the first half. And United just kind of killed it, pretty much. So, yeah, they're lucky to get a point today.
Can I throw some stats at you here? In their last 5 games, this is all competitions, Manchester United have conceded 132 shots. Not shots on target, just shots. Yep. 20 today, again against Bournemouth. That seems to be almost catastrophic defensively, isn't it?
But that's the norm now for Manchester United. That is the norm now. The middle of the park can't stop anybody from getting through it.
Is that it?
And then when they do get through it, the back four can't stop anybody from either creating or getting a shot off or scoring goals.
Is there anything Ten Hag can do to maybe not fix it, but at least solidify it a little bit? I mean, they're getting shelled every time out.
Well, they're going to have to bunker in a bit more. Mm-hmm. That's the only way they can do it. Casemiro can't get around, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. As far as Manu's concerned, with the ball and on the ball, he is absolutely fantastic. I don't know that defensively he's anywhere close to what he's like with the ball at his feet. Mm-hmm. And Bruno Fernandes is not the guy that you want sitting deep and challenging people and tackling people. So Consequently, you've got Rashford high, Garnacho high, who will come back on the occasions. And so the back four are just getting run at constantly. And unfortunately, the back four aren't good enough to deal with that. And as I said a minute ago, they can't stop anybody getting a shot. They can't stop anybody putting passes in and around them. Fortunately today, Onana made some really good saves and they end up with a point.
One win in their last seven. Anybody looking to make a case for Erik ten Hag to stick around? I mean, there's just not much, is there?
Why? I can't come up with a reason why.
Yeah. And you would think maybe towards the end of the season you might find something, but it almost seems like they're going in the wrong direction now, right?
At the end of the day, there's no question Manchester United don't have the players to challenge for the Premier League title. Mm-hmm. They clearly don't have them to challenge for the top four. And the manager hasn't made any difference to them in the time that he's been here, really. And so, yeah, why? Why would you keep him?
Manchester United pick up a draw away from home against Bournemouth as the game finishes 2-2. Plenty more of this discussion on Extra Time today. We hope that we'll have Don back. If not, it might just be me and Stevie. Chit-chat.
After all that money spent on his internet.
Hey, that's right.
He's gone.
There it is. We had a great chat on yesterday's edition of Extra Time where we take your questions off social media. And as always, you can find it over on the YouTube channel.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Barcelona go away to Cadiz and win 1-0 despite making 8 changes to the team they put out against PSG in the Champions League. Joao Felix with a bicycle kick goal in the 37th minute. The difference. What does it mean atop the Spanish table? Well, not a whole lot because Real Madrid also went away to Mallorca and won 1-0 thanks to a goal from Tchouaméni in the second half. So everything stays the same. Real Madrid currently 8 points ahead of second place Barcelona. All right, Craig is shuffled into studio to replace Stevie. Luis Garcia with us as well. Luis, what do you make of Barcelona's performance here, especially given all the changes that Xavi made?
Well, it's a little bit of the kind of the three games that we've been watching for the three teams that they are involved in the Champions League. It was all about trying to get a good result, trying to rest the players who are going to be involved in the midweek game, trying to give some minutes to those players who are no more played often. Today, we saw Pedri getting minutes, we saw Fermin getting minutes, we saw Victor Roque getting minutes, João Félix once again being important. And let's don't forget that João Félix, yeah, it's true that kind of frustrates us a little bit because of his inconsistency, but every single time that he's got a good day is definitive. Today, again, giving 3 points. Let's don't forget, gave 3 points also against Real Madrid, against Barcelona. There's been a few games where in the moment that he had the chance of scoring, he's been a very important key player for Barcelona. So Xavi needs from all these players for the rest of the season. So it was about taking out of the way, and now Barcelona can focus on the massive game that they're going to have in midweek against Paris Saint-Germain.
Now, most people love a bicycle kick.
Yeah, I love one. I just can't do it. Couldn't do it then.
What was your problem with João Félix's goal then?
Well, it's not a problem with João Félix's goal per se. It's a problem with this allowing the continuation of overhead kicks when defenders are relatively close. And I keep saying it. In a day and age where it has never been more important to have player safety in any sport, at the top of the agenda, and yet we're still allowed these, we'll call it skills, to be attempted, which was a great one this time by a very technical player. We're still allowing these to happen when defenders are expected to put their head in, and it's not seen as a free kick. Now, I hear it, Barcelona fans shouting at the TV. It's nothing against Barcelona. It's a generalisation. I've always felt that if there's nobody around and you're trying an overhead kick, that's fine. But if you're scoring a goal from 6 yards out or thereabouts, and a couple of defenders are going to put their head in, what's the argument here? The defender should put his head in, and if he gets a boot straight in the eye or straight in the nose, it's a free kick? I mean, who in their right mind is going to do that?
In this day and age, yeah, it's
not. It might be the odd one. So I've always had a little problem with that. I'm not taking away from the skill, but look, it's either a high boot or it's not a high boot, and I don't understand why it is called a free kick anywhere else in the field, apart from when an attacking player is attempting it in a box. It's called great skill. I'm a miserable sod, aren't I, sometimes?
You do sound a little grumpy.
It is what it is with stuff like that, and I don't understand why the law is applied differently in the penalty area rather than somewhere else on the field.
Luis, what's your perspective on this? Do you think the goal from João Félix maybe should have been disallowed?
Dear Pelé, dear Maradona, please don't hear what Kerry is saying. He doesn't know what he's talking about. I understand what Kerry's mentioning, but I hope that Noah can hear what he's talking and we are not in the conversation of disallowing the goal from bicycle kicks, because the beauty of football is that some players can have the boldness of trying to do a skill like this one. I just remind one from Cristiano Ronaldo, one from Gareth Bale, that they are going to be in the history of football books because of the beauty of those kind of goals. Of course, the moment, it was also very important. But I think that it's true that it's a little bit dangerous. It's true that it has to be considered and be careful of. But I think it's a piece of a skill not for everyone. Just a few bits of player can manage to score a goal like this one. So I enjoy very much. It's a top goal. And hopefully there is no many more false or disallowed goals from these kind of skills.
There you have it. Barcelona 1-0 winners over Cádiz. What about what's next for Barcelona? Of course, the Champions League second leg against PSG. Barcelona with a 3-2 lead after the first leg as we take a look at the odds here. Luis, I guess Barcelona's got to feel pretty good about this game now. Certainly after the fact that they were able to get the points today and rest all those players ahead of the second leg.
Yeah, exactly. It was about giving some rest, giving some minutes to the players not involved, and to keep the momentum. I think the Barcelona is in a fantastic moment, going with one goal ahead to Paris Saint-Germain, makes them open up, try to go to get the equalizer at the Stadium of Barcelona. And of course, that kind of gives you the dominance of the game. I expect Barcelona to do well. They look more solid at the back with the incorporation of Cubarsí next to Araujo. Araujo hasn't even played a minute today, so that shows what is the commitment of this Barcelona for the game against Paris Saint-Germain. And let's see, of course, it's a tough, tough game. We all know that if Mbappe is got the day, it's going to be very difficult to stop him. Dembele is another very important player, so you need to have an eye on those players. But if Barcelona can tie them up the way that they did it last week, I think that they got a big, big chance to be in the semifinals. And as Greg was mentioning, if we were talking about Barcelona being in the semifinal 2-3 months ago, probably they will have thought that we were crazy. So a great opportunity to kind of clear and make of this madness of season a very good one if this Barcelona side arrived to the semifinals.
Barcelona obviously in the driver's seat here heading to the second leg. What's their biggest worry?
That they don't deal with Mbappe.
And they did in the first leg?
Yeah, but he never turned up. Yeah, there was you can look at it both ways. They did a good job on him and he didn't do enough to try and extricate himself from what they were trying to do and what they did do. And look, what was the weakest point of the Barcelona side defensively and has been for a while? It was the left-hand side. It was João Cancelo. Why would, when he's having a quiet game, Kylian Mbappe not trot over to the right-hand side, because Barcola played there in the second half and did okay. Why would he not trot over there? because you got a one-on-one, him and Kinsella, he'd rip him to shreds. He can't. Kinsella's a fantastic footballer, but he can't defend. He's not a good defender. And so they have to find a way, PSG, to get this guy in the game. Now, I don't know where his head's at, you know, whether he's annoying, whether he's upset with every his teammates, doesn't think they're good enough, he's going to Real Madrid, blah, blah, blah.
Probably mad at the manager for not playing him.
That's another story. But that's a big concern for Barcelona.
Mm-hmm.
If they get it right, but their basics right, defend well, and get the same kind of supply chain to Lewandowski, and Rafinha has another great night, and Lamine Yamal plays well, and all that sort of stuff, they're the favourites to go through. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very, very close, but they're the favourites to go through, so they're in a very good position as we speak, but they've got to make sure they keep Mbappe quiet for a second game in a row, which is not going to be easy.
Since you mentioned Lewandowski, and we see him in the game today, suspended. Luis, I wonder what you think of Lewandowski. 2 goals in his last 7 across all comps. Is that a worry, his form leading into this game against PSG?
If he played the same way that he played against PSG, I'm not worried at all, because he provides so many good things for Barcelona. We are talking about when Barcelona has been struggling on the build-up, when he's been under pressure, and Lewandowski was the way out, bringing those long balls, passing that first line of pressure and arriving to Lewandowski. If he can hold the ball the way he did it against Paris Saint-Germain, turning around, providing assists to the players, I'm not worried about, because it's very important to have a striker who can hold the ball, who can lay off, who can move and be a worry for the two centre-backs, because you got two wide players who can be decisive, who can be players of 1v1, and they got speed enough to beat those players. So goals will arrive. If he's at the right moment and if he's in the right spot at the right time, goals will arrive. But I was very, very happy for the way that he performed. It doesn't matter if he scored or not. Of course, when Lewandowski is scoring, Barcelona is a better team. But what he gave back to the team in the game against Paris Saint-Germain was one of the best performances that I've seen from Lewandowski in the whole season.
With one eye on their upcoming Champions League trip to Manchester, Real Madrid went away to Mallorca and won 1-0 despite making 5 changes to the team they put forth. In the midweek against City, Aurelien Tchouameni, who suspended for the second leg against City, scored the game's only goal just 3 minutes into the second half. Okay, Luis, what'd you make of Real Madrid's performance here?
Well, actually, a very practical performance. A very slow first 45 minutes, just waiting to see what Mallorca was going to show. Mallorca was very happy with that point, with that 0-0 in the first 45, and then Real Madrid increase the tempo, start making some changes with the entrance introduction of Vini Junior. The pace of the game just changed straight away. A couple of good actions, a good goal from Tchouameni, a little bit of deflection. But it's true that Mallorca, when they woke up, when they tried to bring a little bit of danger of in Real Madrid side, it was already too late. They were behind the score by 1 goal, and it's very difficult to get back to Real Madrid. That he was in possession, he was dominant. And again, they were looking for that one. Get that goal, get the 3 points, keep that gap between them and Barcelona, and focus on the midweek game against Manchester City. That is the bigger one. For Mallorca, it was a pity, because I think that they are going to get in trouble. They are 6 points away from relegation spot. Today was a good option to get that goal, to get that equalizer, and get maybe a point. That it will be a fantastic one for them for the rest of the season. But in the end, it's the movie we've seen so many times. Real Madrid with a slow and flat performance, getting the 3 points and getting ready for the big matches.
Craig, you look at the list of guys that got a rest. Cruz, Camavinga, Carvajal, Vinny and Rodrigo, all those guys started the game on the bench. That's big, isn't it?
Yeah, and Barca gave 8 players a rest, so you know, you could see what it was all about. Obviously, Toni Kroos, important, he got a rest because he's in his 30s, played a lot of football. So Modric comes in today, but Kroos will play, obviously, in Manchester. And I think in particular, you know, maybe you could have talked about Bellingham getting a rest today, but he's a youngish guy, isn't he? But so he's looking for a little bit of form. He's lost that little bit of edge recently, but it was an amazing start to the season from him. But I think the importance was to give a rest, not so much of a rest, but to make sure the two front guys who are going to be giving Guardiola palpitations for the next couple of days, because he'll be thinking about how are we going to cope with Real Madrid on the counter-attack. Real Madrid are not going to outplay Man City. That's Ancelotti knows that. The players know that. But City know how dangerous this team are going to be if they get sloppy, if they get pressed, if they give a ball away. And that's why it's so important, I think, that Kyle Walker is available and possibly plays, to have that insurance policy if he's pays. Because Vinicius and Rodrigo were a handful on the counter-attack in the Bernabeu. And that's what Real Madrid will do all day long, all night long at the Emirates. They will wait and they will wait and they will wait. And if City get themselves in bad positions, as they have done in the Premier League this season many times, it's not been their strong point, then this Real Madrid side will punish them. So it is a real cat and mouse game. But you know, we know the way it will go in terms of the flow of the game. And Real Madrid will just wait and they'll be patient. And then if City expose themselves, boy, they're going to be a handful to stop at the other end, as they showed when City got a little bit slack defensively in the Bernabeu in midweek. They got punished big time.
Can I ask you about Andre Lunin? Obviously, he's had a good season playing so far.
Yeah.
But last couple games, certainly at the end of the game that we just witnessed, there was some shaky moments. Do you think that could be a disadvantage for Real Madrid in the second leg? Is that worth a concern for them?
Well, at the end of the day, any goalkeeper that makes a mistake in a big game, it's a concern. So if he makes the same mistakes again, then it is. He got cut out from the Bernardo Silva free kick. There is no doubt about that. He tried to read it. He then got himself back across and had a bit of a weak hand and it went in. He's been a good shot stopper this season for them. But look, he's no Thibaut Courtois, but he's the number one. And he's just got to make sure that he does the basics. And he got caught out in midweek. But I get the feeling if Real Madrid do go out, it won't be because of him. Mm. It'll be because City have outplayed them and maybe create all these chances. And maybe Rudiger doesn't handle Haaland and they don't handle Haaland like they did. Don't forget De Bruyne will be back as well. He was ill before the game in the Bernabeu. So look, Real Madrid have had their problems all year. You know, goalkeeping problems, full-back problems, centre-half problems. And they have dealt with it admirably. But they're going to need another big push to keep this City side out. Bear in mind, last year, do you remember, 4-0? Mm-hmm. Don't expect that, but it is going to be a tough night for them, potentially, at the Etihad. And they're going to play in the counter. That's what they're going to do.
6 goals in the first leg. Luis, what kind of game do you think we get in the second leg?
Hopefully similar. It was exciting to see the two sides just going ahead. And we were talking a lot about the goal away, if that is beneficial or not, or if that proved that it's good for the game, for the supporters to see that the two teams, they go ahead not thinking about what is going to happen in the second leg. And I think that's been fantastic, and we have enjoyed so much. So I expect Man City to bring another gear in the game when they play at home. I expect Real Madrid to wait and see. I'm looking forward to see if once again Ancelotti is going to make that change between Vinicius Junior and Rodrigo. Rodrigo, we saw him during the game that he was lying a little bit on the left side, making Vinicius Junior coming down to the center a little bit more. Let's don't forget that one of the goals was from Vinicius Junior making the pass through in between the lines for the run of Rodrigo. So it was a little bit of change, tactical change that Ancelotti did, and I'm expecting him to do against the same. So let's see how Manchester City manage that situation. And apart from that, I think it's going to be a very, very exciting game. A lot of speed. Manchester City needs to bring that level higher. I didn't like the way that they play a little bit in Real Madrid, just waiting and having possession without much intention, just moving around Real Madrid players. I want them to be a little bit more aggressive going forward. And that way, I think that we are going to see a fantastic game once again. Lot of goals.
Second leg between Real Madrid and Manchester City Wednesday in Manchester. Luis Garcia, always great to have you with us here on ESPN FC. Thanks so much for the time. More La Liga on your ESPN Plus television screens tomorrow. Las Palmas and Sevilla kicking things off at 8 a.m. Eastern time. And then the game also, which will appear on ESPN2. Athletic Club, fresh off that Copa del Rey title, taking on Villarreal. The match day ends on Monday with Osasuna against Valencia. That just ahead of next Sunday's Clásico. That's right, Real Madrid against Barcelona next Sunday from the Spanish capital. Coverage starts at 2 p.m. Eastern time right here on ESPN+. It's also streaming live over on the ESPN app. If you're out in California, try to get over to Splitsville in Anaheim. That's right. Check out the QR code on your screen to register. If you can't get into Splitsville, no worries. Just head to Downtown Disney, where we'll be having a watch party for Real Madrid against Barcelona. I'll be in attendance. So will Iker Casillas. So will Patrick Kluivert, I'm told. So all the star power you can handle ahead of El Clásico next Sunday, which is available here on ESPN+. And as always, a good time to remind you about our ESPN FC YouTube channel. Lots of content from this show, other great programs like Football America's joined the more than 3 million subscribers over on our ESPN FC YouTube channel today.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
What about Wrexham? Of course, are into League Two after getting promoted last year. And now, Stevie, they've earned promotion from League Two into League One. Back-to-back promotions for the boys from Wrexham. Amazing, amazing stuff. That's tough to do, ain't it?
Yeah. They've been really smart with their signings, though. They've signed a lot of experience, a lot of know-how. And a lot of that know-how plays football. And they've played their way through. Plenty of long ball stuff. They've played good football.
Shout out to Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney for all their good work as we bring it back to the Barcelona match, which wrapped up not that long ago here on ESPN+. 1-0 winners was Barcelona, thanks to a 37th-minute goal from Joao Felix. Let's get some post-game reaction here from Xavi Hernandez.
So it was a very important game, Xavi, to win, you said yesterday. Are you happy with the result? But maybe you suffered at the very end of the game.
Yeah, we suffered again because we didn't score the second one. I think we create chances, we dominate the game, but we suffer at the end, yes. It's very difficult to play against this kind of teams because they are aggressive, especially at their home, so but I'm proud. I'm proud of the team because the players that don't participate too much lately, they play very well. They compete so well. So yes, happy and satisfied.
So you think this is the right mentality to go and face a capital game against PSG? You think you see your team strong enough to beat them again?
Yes, I could see the team ready to compete in all the games. Now we. We are 3 months, I think, without a lose, so we are in the best moment of the season. Yes, now is the decisive part of the season, and we are in the best moment. So yes, that's it. That's why I'm happy.
All right, great work there from our Gemma Soler to provide the post-game interview with Xavi Hernandez. That'll do it for this edition of ESPN FC. Don't worry, Stevie, I have some good news before we get out of here. We will have Don Hutchison with us for today's edition of Extra Time, which starts right now.
Good style.
Look at that. Hey there, everybody. How are you? Welcome into the ESPN FC studios. You didn't see my...
You look Groucho Marx going over there.
Why don't you show everybody? What was your impression?
No, you show what you did.
I was just...
Let's run. No, you know. You were bent over.
Oh, I got a bad back, Stevie.
Just look up Groucho Marx.
I got a bad back. This is the issue. From carrying the show, some might say. I'm in here with Stevie. We got Don Hutchison with us as well as we get ready to take your questions off of social media. Oh. No surprise here. First question is a percentage question for
Good,
Don.
Good, I've been looking
right.
forward to them.
And it comes from
Come on, Don.
Natum's interior decorator. Obligatory percentage question for Don. What's the percentage chance that Wrexham reach the Premier League in the next 5 years? Back-to-back promotions already for Wrexham.
Oh, Stevie, it can't be a zero. I'll give them a 5. I'll be kind.
Wow.
Give them a 5%
All right,
chance.
2.
No faith in the Hollywood scriptwriters? I mean, you got to admit it's pretty impressive. You got to admit, it's pretty impressive what they've done.
Yes.
Surely that gives you some confidence that they can continue to move this team up.
Listen, they're miles away from the Premier League. Miles away. In fact, they're let me put it this way. They're millions away would be a better idea.
Okay.
Millions. Maybe
you don't think these guys have millions?
Billion.
You don't think these guys have millions or buddies with billions?
A billion?
I bet they do. Yeah, they make some pretty successful movies, those guys.
If you had a billion, would you spend that on a football team?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But I, you know.
I'll be right. That would,
yeah, right. That's more about me. Man, you don't think there's any chance?
In 5 years, are you having a laugh? That means they're going to have...
When they were in the National League, how likely would you have said that they'd be in League One in 2 years?
Yeah, good chance. Well, the level of football is not that different from...
Everybody says the National League's the toughest league to get promoted out of.
But it's not that different. It's not that different to the League Two. It's the same level. It really is, pretty much.
Okay.
Obviously, there's a little step up, but it's not that big a step up. Now you're starting to take a step up. No.
Okay. All right. So, what's like a reasonable expectation then for year one in League One?
Stay in the league.
Stay up. Just to stay up.
Stay up.
Okay.
All right. Absolutely.
Fair enough. Stevie, money aside, if you could bring any player in the world other than Mbappe or Haaland to Liverpool, who would it be? Any player.
Any player.
What's your biggest need today? Let's start there.
Well, the fact that Salah is going to be gone, mm-hmm. whether it's this year or next year,
that's what you got to do.
Osimhen? I think Osimhen would be fantastic for Liverpool.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's the one guy in the world you'd sign.
Well, the middle of the park. We've just signed McAllister and Szoboszlai. Mm-hmm. I mean, Endo's turned out to be incredible. Just what you need, you know. You need somebody who's going to run around all day, tackle people, get the ball, and give it to McAllister, Szoboszlai, or Salah, or whoever.
What does that mean for Nunez? Is he starting out wide then?
He's starting wide.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don, what about you with your Liverpool ways? All the money in the world, other than Mbappe or Haaland, who you bring into the club?
Jude Bellingham all day long. Mm. He's got charisma. Stevie mentioned run all day, pass all day, score all day. He ticks every single box.
Forgot about him.
Jude Bellingham by a mile.
I forgot about him, though.
Not a bad shout. Not a bad shout.
You did.
Other than Bellingham, possibly.
For all, is Ange Postecoglou slightly overrated?
Absolutely not.
Ask this now after the 4-0.
Absolutely not. This is the best time to ask it. There's no being nice or whatever.
Okay.
Absolutely not.
He's not overrated.
He's coming to the league. This is his first year in the league. Mm-hmm. And obviously he wants to play the way he wants to play, and it's attacking and all the rest of it. Eventually he's going to understand that they have some sort of consistency at a certain level. You can't do it unless you've got the right players. And when I say that, I'm talking about the Liverpool side that won the Premier League and the Champions League, who played this open, get after it. But they had a back line that wasn't giving anything away. You couldn't get out against them. So, unfortunately, Spurs are never going to spend that amount of money to get in that position. So he's going to have to understand that away from home, you can't just open up and try and just go toe-to-toe and outplay not only the opposition, but 50 or 60,000 fans as well. So no, he's not overrated. He took over from two guys that won the Premier League, won the Champions League. And he's actually put them to shame with the way that he's turned the club around. So you absolutely cannot say he's overrated. Absolutely not.
Don, if he's not overrated, what is the knock on Ange Postecoglou?
I think the knock is that he's very predictable and he's got a plan A and that's it. And the best managers, I think, have different plans for different teams. Guardiola's the best example. You know, he might look like he's playing the same system, but there's tiny tweaks that you can spot in-game. It might look on paper that he plays a 4-3-3 or a 4-2-3-1, Pep, but he doesn't. It's the rotation of players where Tottenham at the minute are a great watch, and it's not a criticism because Stevie's right. Antonio Conte had a nightmare there. Jose Mourinho had a nightmare there. They were a dull watch. At least when you're paying your money now as a Tottenham fan, you're getting entertained. But there's got to be a different way. They can't just be naive and think they can go into every single game playing off-the-cuff football, because that's what they do, Tottenham. They play off-the-cuff football. It's get the ball to the good players. We'll see what they can do on the day. If they play well, they win. If they don't, they'll lose. And that can't be a recipe to try and, especially once you go into the Champions League or get into the Champions League and eventually try and fight for the top one, two, three spots in the Premier League. Off-the-cuff football does not work. Mm.
Fun for the neutral to watch, if nothing else. Don, what's the percentage chance that at least one of the current bottom three survive in the Premier League? So we got Sheffield United and Burnley
gone.
Then you got Luton on 25, Forest on 26, yep. Everton 27, and then a little gap to Crystal Palace at 30. So what do you think?
I think Everton have got two games in hand, so I think they should be fine. I think Palace, Brentford are fine. They've got a massive win today, which took them to 32. So one more win, 35, and they'll be safe. I think 34, 35 is the number. But I think it's between Luton, Forest and Palace. Hmm. But because Palace are on 30, they are nearly there. So I'd give them a 50-50 chance between them and Forest.
Wow.
I think it's two sides vying for one place. I still think Everton will be okay.
Who's staying up between those two, Stevie? Forest or Luton? Or do you think it's somebody else that's dropping
down? I'm going 60-40, Forest.
To stay up?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, Luton, I've got a lot of injuries right now. So, and Luton, it's all about energy and legs. Mm-hmm. It's not so much about ability. And so when you're depleted, he's not going to be able to make a lot of changes. And you're going to have a lot of tired players. Whereas Forrest is the opposite. They've got too many players, but they're going to have legs. Mm. And they just seem to get a point or get a result just when they look as though they're going to drop near that, right into that bottom three. So I would go 60-40, Forrest stay up.
Got a good point today with Gio Reyna in the starting lineup, did Forrest. Spotty asks, it's obvious that Erik ten Hag needs to leave. Who is the right person to take over and change the atmosphere in this team? Don, if it's not Erik ten Hag, who should be in charge of Manchester United?
It's not going to be ten Hag. It will not be Erik ten Hag. He's been a manager on trial. No wins in four. He's not convincing the hierarchy that he's going to be staying on. He can convince himself, but he won't be staying on. Do you know, I think it might be someone like Southgate, Gareth Southgate. I think the job that he does, trying to work with younger players, moulding a younger team, it's not going to be a quick fix. You could mention any manager and they're going to have their troubles. You know, there's so many players at that football club that needs to be moved on. Anthony Martial, I read in the papers today that he's been moved on. He's not getting a contract extension. They've got the same problems with sort of Rafa Varane coming towards the end of his career. Christian Eriksen at the same time. Jadon Sancho is not even at the football club. Antony will probably be sold as well. There's a lot of debate in England over Marcus Rashford. Is he going to move to PSG? Is he going to get out of Manchester? Is it good for him to move? So to answer the question, I think Southgate, but I think they're all going to struggle.
I asked you last week what your reaction would be from a Liverpool perspective if Gareth Southgate was hired by Manchester United. And you obviously,
and I said,
you had a good laugh.
Yes!
So what would bring about the opposite reaction? If Manchester United hired who?
Jürgen Klopp.
Well, give me a realistic one then.
All right. I can't. I don't know.
There's no.
Manchester United have tried everything since Ferguson left.
Right.
They've tried it. They have tried every single thing. Young manager, old manager, experienced manager. Mm-hmm.
Premier League experience.
They've gone through the gamut.
Could it be someone like Thomas Frank? Thomas Frank energise Man United? I think they should go all in for Unai Emery and Monchi, who's the sporting director. That's what I'd do.
Okay.
The biggest problem is the players. Problem they got is the players.
But you've said they need to get a new coach. So
So
we still got to figure out who that right guy is, right?
Yes. Yeah, you got to figure it out. But,
what do you think about Don shouts there, Unai Emery, Thomas Frank?
I mean, Unai Emery absolutely organises people well, organises his teams well, makes sure that everybody does the job, which is not something you can say about Man United, because you don't really know what job they're all doing. But it's got to start somewhere, and I guess being organised is a good place to start, because they're not even organised. Honestly, Don just went through the lot.
Yeah.
You can't shift Rashford. He's on about 12 mil a year. He's got another 4 years in his contract. How are you going to shift Anthony? He spent 100 million on him.
Yeah.
He's on.
Well, if you ship him, you're shipping him for a big loss. Yeah.
You're carrying Jadon Sancho around on your back. I mean, you're. You can't move Harry Maguire. He's not going anywhere. He's on too much money as well. I mean. Casemiro? You can't move Casemiro. And we were talking about the game in the show that Casemiro can't get around anymore. Well, he can't get around anymore, but he's still got another two, maybe more, on his contract at 14 million or something. They're in such a mess. And it's going to take more than just a change of manager. But the fact is, the Ten Hag is getting absolutely nothing out of this team. And if your coach is getting nothing from the team, then there's not a reason to keep him.
Enough Manchester United. Let's move forward to something more positive. Actually, check that. For Don, how bad are Juventus? Percentage chance of them not qualifying for the Champions League next season? Played to a scoreless draw against Torino.
Yeah, they'll probably make it. They'll probably squeak through. But I think, you know, Stevie there's talking about a managerial change. I think this is the summer where I think Juve have to bite the bullet and fire Allegri. He's on something like 14 or 15 million pounds a year. I think it's the last year of his contract. Thiago Motta at Bologna has done an amazing job, so he'll be getting scouted, I'd imagine. De Rossi's done a good job at Roma since he took over from Jose Mourinho. No one talks about Gasperini, and not just because of the result against Liverpool. He's been a brilliant manager for a long time. But I think they'll still make top four, Juve. I think they'll squeak over the line. But I do not see Max Allegri being their coach next season. Maybe someone like Roberto De Zerbi. He might be linked with them, or he might be thinking of buying, because it looks like Brighton are on the beach. But to answer the question, I think Juve will still make it, but only just.
Coaching carousel going to be busy this coming summer. Last one for all. Where do you see Tony, Solanke, and Isak going? Talking about potential moves for strikers. Don, what do you think?
Nowhere.
I know you don't want to see Isak going.
No. Arsenal have been linked with him massively. Arsenal have been linked with Tony. I mean, Solanke would be a good replacement for Callum Wilson, in truth. I think it's probably time that Callum Wilson probably moved on, because he's a brilliant player when he's fit, but just can't seem to stay fit for long periods of time. So maybe Solanke, Newcastle, Tony, Arsenal, Isak, nowhere.
I thought Isak was really, really good today. Give me those three in order for you.
Yeah, I'm a Don. Isak's gone nowhere. They've got to get him. They've got to try and keep him fit. Mm-hmm. If they can do that, he's fantastic. He's going absolutely well. So Solanke, I'm not sure about Solanke.
After today?
Yeah. What do you mean? They're playing Man United.
You said it. You said it.
And I don't think Tony fits in at Arsenal. Tony will go somewhere, absolutely, but I don't know where.
Chelsea?
Maybe Chelsea.
Chelsea, ooh, how about that?
Yeah.
Lots of big clubs.
Yeah, I like the sound. That sounds a bit right to me.
Lots of big clubs in the market for strikers, and lots of big strikers could be on the move. Should be a very fun summer indeed. That'll do it for this edition of Extra Time. Our thanks to Don and Stevie, and our thanks to you for sending in the questions from social media. We'll be back tomorrow with another brand new edition of ESPN FC. Make sure to join us then, as we are all over the Premier League title race, Arsenal and Liverpool both in action.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.